really do want to come in to Jerry this morning. I don't get to hear Jerry. You've had Jerry for decades, and I did not. And every time he stands up with the Lord's Supper, I just marvel, truly do, at the depth of his understanding and the tools that he has to express it to us, and wish I had been here all those years getting used to your weather, but profiting also from Jerry's expertise as a preacher. I think I see Jerry in a lot of you, too. I know Mark has done this. I think Dean also has developed a month-long theme, as Jerry's done with Psalm number 2. And I don't believe I'd ever seen that in the 40-some years that I've been a Christian now. I really appreciate it. Just that kind of presentation does help us focus on the glory of why we are here, which is the glory of our God. So thank you, Jerry, you know, for that, and all of you that participate in these assemblies. And James, you need to tell me where you got that jacket too, because I really like that. Everybody's done a fine job this morning. How many of you are familiar with that? My family actually never watched this particular sitcom, which I have learned only yesterday. As a matter of fact, I was thinking about this. Never listened to it in the years that we were raising children, though we did have kids at home at this time. Apparently it's a fairly successful TV show, Growing Pains, lasting there, you know, some 7-8 years, I guess. Really surprised to discover, as I was digging around thinking about something I'll mention in a minute, that, you know, that's Leonardo DiCaprio over there on the far right. I guess everybody gets to be young and starts out early. I didn't even recognize it until I got thinking about it. So if you're familiar with Growing Pains, you know that the title of that sitcom, which I'm not familiar with, but nonetheless suggested that with growth there does come pain, is a thought that's been with us for an awful long time. I've always heard the expression really in only one sense, which had to do with emotional and the struggles that you have, you know, and oftentimes the turmoil and difficulties you have with your parents, you know, are called growing pains. But I was surprised to find out that there really is such a thing physically as well, and that children between the ages of 4 and 14, usually it's over by the time you're 14, but in those years will wake up just screaming in the night for no apparent reason. Pain usually in the legs that is a result somehow of their youth and of their growing. Physically, it is so. We apply the expression, you know, somewhat emotionally and in the mental health and growth of our children. And I would suggest, brethren, that it is very certainly something that takes place in successful churches, in growing churches as well. Churches are always in a state of flux. They are always changing. And yet, there are certain lengths of time that might be just a matter of a year or two, or it might be a decade or more, where we will fall into a certain habit or manner. We have developed a way that things work, and we get used to that, and so it becomes our traditional approach to things. And then if that gets upset, it gets somehow, you know, contradicted, or in any way we have some sort of conflict, you know, it's difficult for churches. It's, so churches go through growing pains. They go through cycles in which the status quo, the way things were, you know, gets somehow altered. In 2013, Don and I spent our first full year with you. We moved here dead center in the middle of 2012. My first sermon here, I think, was July 19th. And so we had 6 months in 2012. Now we had the full year of 2013. And as I had said 2 weeks ago in the sermon I presented then, I've been kind of thinking about working with some sort of a year-end recap or review kind of material, which we'll be doing here this morning. So in 2013, I wanted to find out what had happened. I went back through the records as best I could, and discovered that in that year, this church had a total of 4 baptisms, which is really pretty impressive. You can find a congregation that on the average is bringing someone to Christ every third month or fourth month. You're really looking at a congregation that is surprisingly effective as things go across the country and around the world today. So this congregation had four baptisms and deserves to be commended for that. We also had, and I'm speaking now only of adults, we also had 11 adult members who joined this congregation, people that moved into the area, already were Christians, and decided that with several choices, they could or felt best to work with us. That is, and obviously, a total of 15 adults that in the course of this last year, and some fairly recently, just the last few months, have decided that they want to work with the Coburg Road Church of Christ. We've changed. We've changed pretty dramatically to have 11 new souls who are either coming out of the world or from some other part of the world. As soon as their rocks get dropped into our pond, you know, automatically, the ripples just start flowing out everywhere, don't they? Adjustments need to be made. We have to start, you know, working with each other, because especially for the 11 that are coming from other parts of the country, brethren, other congregations have very different ways of doing things. And so when you plop yourself down, as the Watt family, you know, has just done, you'll discover that it's not going to be like it was, probably. And we're challenged as well. So it had 15 additions, and they changed the mix. They impact the way that we function. We also had some losses this year. We lost Ruth Regal. We lost Betty New. We lost people that were especially precious to us and which had been with us for a very long time, I'm told. Don and I were new, but these are people that we understand were longtime members and influential, very successful, very exemplary here in this congregation. We had a total of five in 2013 that said, we've had it with you. Okay. In some cases, it might have been with me more personally. I accept responsibility for that. Might be they're frustrated with the elders. You know, we're not even sure, didn't get any kind of feedback from several of these. But there were a total of five adults who said, that's it. We don't want to be a part of Coburg Road Church any longer. And that, of course, is also painful. Painful for a different way, but it hurts nonetheless. And then, of course, with the loss of Betty, Harold moved. Yeah, Harold New left us for Cottage Grove, and so we had been a total of eight that left. Brethren, those though are really good numbers. That's impressive again. There's movement that's certainly in the right direction, at least, or in the direction that we most desire. We've had quite a net gain in the membership of the congregation this year. Seven adults and the attendant children, plus all the influence that they have with others that they know in the community, has come our way in 2013. That's the chart from which I was able to derive a lot of figures that I've been thinking about now, but I realize you can't read it, you don't need to, it'd just be confusing to you anyway. But what I did here was to go through painstakingly, looking at all the attendance records, which we appreciate Bob doing so painstakingly every time we meet, and then trying to think in terms of averages and break it down even into quarters, but trying to see if I just couldn't, you know, develop some sort of sense of how we're doing with regard to attendance, just all attendance numbers right there. Went back and did 2012 as well, even though we were only here for half that time. I wanted to see, you know, if there were some comparisons that we could make there too. And it was good news. And again, really good news. In 2013, brethren, our attendance is trending up in all categories. It's not very dramatic at all. It's to be expected with the additions that we had, but we have seen some improvement. The twos and threes, you know, is really all that mattered to, though in some cases we've got only four or five better numbers in the various classes or assembly times that we have, except for the Wednesday night class. The Wednesday night class was really shocking for me, as we are down an average of about 7 point something, you know, between 5 and 10 over where we started with my Revelation class. That may well be my fault. I'll accept full responsibility for that. It's a very challenging class. I know that. I've seen some pretty serious attrition, you know, in the 7 other times that I've taught that class. So, you know, maybe that really does have to do more with the material than it does with me. I don't know. But at this point especially, brethren, I want everybody to know that all these figures
part of the reason I really don't even want you to see them is that they are so subjective. They really don't tell the story. They give you just the barest bones kind of an outline. What has been happening on Wednesday nights may have as much to do with an aging population, the inability to be able to coming, as the problems of the flesh assail those that are growing older among us. You know, they just simply can't. It's impossible. And so you really don't know. There are other factors. It might have something to do with younger ones. It might have to do with sickness that just happened to come at a particular time of the year or something, you know. And so I really don't know, except that the broad outlines are taking place like that. Well, generally, certainly the earlier numbers I showed you are harder and really encouraging. This is a congregation that is not static. And it is not one that is shrinking. That was really encouraging in 2013. It was something else that was also noticeable that was trending up in 2013. I love that word. That's a real word. I had to look it up, make sure I spelled it right. Discombobulation, another one of my favorite words here. You can get it before it ends, you know, perturbation, has to do with those ripples in the pond. It certainly, brethren, in the last year, I also was privy, and thanks to the elders' feedback, you know, I know for sure, that there's a little more distress and conflict and interactions that are more confrontational. The congregation, brethren, is experiencing growing pains. Things are changing. Our population is aging, and as you get into each successive decade, it changes the way you think, the way you behave, how you relate to others. You're very young, you don't behave the same way you do when you're older. And this congregation has been getting more feedback, and negative feedback, and problematic feedback, and distresses and unhappinesses, you know, through the course of the year. Last Sunday we had our business meeting. The elders had their regular meeting. They let me sit in on those. And so, you know, we started half an hour earlier than we ever had before last week. We had more on our plate. We had, you know, stuff that was going on. And again, I want to be very quick to point out, brethren, this is not a troubled church. Jason, please, stay with us. Tell your wife we're okay. You know, when you get home. Yeah. We're really not a troubled congregation. We're not fighting any big battles doctrinally. We haven't got any issues going on, you know, where people are really at each other's throats. It's just that with change, there's instability. And things happen. People say things. People do things that others are not used to or they don't understand, you know, and so the next thing you know, people are kind of at odds with each other, and they're talking, and they need to work with each other, and they need to straighten things out. They just have, you know, a lack of the status quo, of the peace. And brethren, that is such a good thing. That is so great. It's wonderful. Would that the elders would have to have two-hour business meetings instead of 90-minute business meetings, which just last week replaced the 60-minute business meeting that we had. Give us more. Because, brethren, if you get to the point where nothing's happening, then nothing's happening. And that is always bad. We long for peace. We strive for peace. The Bible is full of passages about peace. We're looking for peace. But that peace in the Scriptures, and we'll look at only a few this morning, comes, the passages come, in the midst of the various discombobulations that were going on in the first century too. People learning how to work together. Now, at great personal risk, let me give you a few examples right here. Before I do, I'm desperately begging you on bended knee, if you find yourself in one of these categories, I'm not picking on you. I'm not seizing, you know, the bully pulpit. So dump on you. It's got nothing to do with any of that. It's just to say that in all these categories, and maybe two or three more, there's been perturbations that have been taking place in recent months.
Now, frankly, I'll admit, here's the one that's the biggest deal to me. Okay? No, of course not. Do I spend any time in the cry room?
No.
Do I even see what goes on in the cry room?
No.
Brethren, if you show me pictures of 16 churches' cry rooms, I'm not sure I can pick ours out of the lineup. You know, I don't have anything to do with the cry room. But I know that others do. I also know this. In 40 years of preaching, that is the most discombobulated room in the building. That is more turbulent because of that room than any other thing that happens here. Bar none, every church, 40 years, and every elder I've ever known up to 80 years, you know, says the same thing. Because of its nature. So, right now, we've got cry room problems. We've got new people in there, we've got old people in there, we've got different people in there, we've got folks moving in, don't know, you know, how things work, and maybe the way things work, read my traditions article this morning in the bulletin, we're not the best, or maybe they're the best they can possibly be. But, you know, we're working that out with new people right now. Great! That's fabulous! Brethren, what if there was nobody in the cry room? Then there's no generation coming up. There's no people with firm dedication in their hearts to say, I'm going to be here with the saints so that my children from birth experience what it is to live among those people, to work with those people, to understand those people, and to become one of those people. I want my kids to learn how to behave among the saints in the midst of a lost and dying world. So, brethren, that is never going away. Ever. And so, for the second time in as many weeks, we got another cry room announcement, you know, in the bulletin. The elders don't hate the young families. Really don't. We're just trying to figure out how can we make everybody happy. Okay, I'm not an elder, but I mean the congregation. We're just working on that. That's the one that I don't like. I don't like that a lot. I feel sometimes like locking the doors. Because, brethren, the amount of time I put into my sermons, the fact that every time you present something, you're building. And you take away the foundation stone at the start of the class, and you got people wandering in 5, 10, 15, 20 minutes late regularly. You are messing me up. You really are. It's just... distresses me! Hey, because I know you're not going to get it. You can't get it. You didn't get the foundation. Now you drop in out of the sky. Everybody's looking around at you. You know, you're coming in. And it doesn't matter if it's the main assembly or the classroom. I got all over my kids last week. They look to still love me this week. It's really neat. Still smiles on their face. Tell your parents, get here. So, Brian, that's the big one for me. But do I not know that for some people it is impossible to settle down in a chair and be ready to go when the saints start their classes? Sure it is. And I try to train myself. When somebody comes in late, they're coming in because they want to be there. And I know they're not there for everything, and I know they're, you know, confusing the rest of the class, and we have to stop and, you know, wait for them to settle, all that. But still, am I glad they're there? I'm glad they're there. Okay? So, if you can't make it, then come whenever you can. If you can, now come on. How hard is this? You do it for school, you do it for work, you do it for everything, you know, you do it here as well. We got problems, brethren, with what I call disassembling. And it's not dissembling, it's disassembling. There's a big difference between the two. That is, when we have an assembly and half a dozen people are out there spread throughout the building doing all kinds of who knows what and thinking that those people in the last few rows don't hear them. Yes, they do. This is not a soundproof building. I pause for effect sometimes and you hear people talking. Back in the hallway, wandering around. You know, again, brethren, you know, it's distressing. But I suppose it was, too, when Eutychus fell out the window. I could wandering the halls. There's no speaker following you. You know, we know you're not. But you know, every so often we're going to say, come on. Come on. You know where the bathroom is. And you pass it when you come in. Use it on the way in. You can wait that long. You know, every so often we're going to say, oh, look, you know, you really don't need to answer a phone call during the assembly. And, you know, really, it's not going to kill you if Larry preaches for 30 minutes. He could sit in a chair that long, most people. But do I know that some people can't? Sure. Had a woman in a congregation for very many years who had a certain spinal condition so that when she assumed a seated position, after a certain number of minutes, all the blood flow was cut off to her head and she fell over in a swoon. Oh. She'd be propped up by other people. You'd learn to catch her. Well, it's best for her to get up and walk around a little bit. Get up and walk around. And let me say, brethren, I don't care if you get up and walk around. I really don't. I'm glad that you're here and we have the problem. But if you can, sit down, will you? Just sit down. Pay attention. Our prayer leaders say and do things that will distress you. We've got a terrible lack of teachers, and it's distressing, it's discouraging for them. But it's because we have rising numbers of people, and some of them have been teaching forever. I had one tell me this week, he can't remember when he's been in a Bible class to be fed himself. Long time he's been at it. So brethren, look, these things, they just happen, and they're great. There's nothing that upsets people. Like this one, every once in a while, you just have to realize, brethren, people tread on people's toes. It's the way the world works. It's never going away, and God knew it. So a sermon like this one, brethren, it's not because the elders are mad or that I'm mad or that we've got a big church problem, and we really don't. I preach a sermon like this just to say that an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. Brethren, we're growing. We are changing. And it's going better. It's great. Give us more problems. And then handle them like Isaiah suggested. So let's go back to Isaiah chapter 2, which was read so capably this morning by James. And come over to Isaiah 2, which is one of the most famous passages in all of this huge book. And note something that Isaiah prophesied some nearly, well, it would be over 750 years before this church that you're a part of and in an assembly right now was ever born. He said this, the word which Isaiah the son of Amos saw concerning Judah and Jerusalem, now it will come about that in the last days, and we're in those days, the mountain of the house of the Lord will be established as the chief of the mountains, be raised above the hills. All the nations will stream to it. Many peoples will come and say, come, let us go up to the mountain of the Lord, to the house of the God of Jacob, that he may teach us concerning his ways. That's why people come, to be taught, that we may walk in his paths. That's why people come, so they can apply what they've been taught. For the law will go forth from Zion, and the word of the Lord from Jerusalem, and he'll judge between the nations, and he'll render decisions for many peoples. That's why people come. Because there's conflict, there's disagreement, and decisions need to be made. And then it says, they will hammer their swords into plowshares, their spears into pruning hooks. Nation will not lift up sword against nation, and never again will they learn war. Now that they is not the whole planet. It's not a discussion about going to heaven or having a millennial kingdom, as the left behind people, you know, think in mythological and legendary kinds of terms. That is to say, that's never going to happen, that silliness. But it is going to happen, brethren, that among the Lord's people, you have to go to work to blunt some of those instruments of conflict. In the church, in the kingdom, in the holy mountain, we have to learn to get along together. I think it's very interesting that in this magnificent, towering prophecy, 750 years before Christ comes to fulfill it, we have this statement about saints learning to get along together. Jehovah's Witnesses, in particular, don't get Isaiah 11. So turn over there a couple other pages and chapters, and let's read these first few verses. It's about Jesus. They get that. We get that. A shoot will spring from the stem of Jesse. A branch from his roots will bear fruit. Spirit of the Lord will rest on him. Spirit of wisdom and understanding. Spirit of counsel and strength. The spirit of knowledge and the fear of the Lord. He'll delight in the fear of the Lord. He will not judge by what his eyes see, nor make a decision by what his ears hear, but with righteousness. He will judge the poor and decide with fairness for the afflicted of the earth. He'll strike the earth with the rod of his mouth, with the breath of his lips. He'll slay the wicked, and righteousness will be the belt about his loins, and faithfulness the belt about his waist. And there's Christ, his kingdom, here on the earth, and everybody's looking for it. This is what we want. The Jews were waiting. Now, 2,000 years later, we eagerly appreciate the advantages we have in being a part of it. But you know, the Jehovah's Witnesses and so many others, Brethren, they really don't get verse 6. They think this is going to be talking about animals. And sometime when really, the physical wolf is going to lie down with the physical lamb, and the physical leopard is going to lie down with the physical kid, and the physical calf, and the physical young lion, and the physical fatling together, and a physical little boy will lead them. Also the cow and the bear will graze, the young will lie down together, the lion will eat straw like the ox, and the nursing child will play by the hole of the cobra, and the weaned child will put his hand in the viper's den. They will not hurt or destroy in all my holy mountain. Brethren, I haven't baptized any snakes recently. We have four baptisms this year, and I don't remember baptizing a single calf, young lion, or fatling. Any of you see that? No, they were people. They will not hurt or destroy in all my holy mountain. Whatever gets in the kingdom is what he's talking about, just like Isaiah 2. And once again, these magnificent passages conclude with talking about people getting along together. They will not hurt or destroy is the point of saying that all these different kinds of people, brethren, I guess I am a more lion-like kind of a guy. Rawr. Rawr. Hey, and other people are more like lambs. I'm good with that. But do the lambs have to learn how to get along with guys like me? Guys like me have to learn to get along with the others. The figures of speech had to do with you. We all have different personalities. But in the holy mountain, you don't hurt and you don't destroy. Because that's it. I love that, Laura. I love new life, young life. Let them scream. I love that. It means, brother, we're growing into terrific. So now, we have to deal with it, don't we? Isaiah's talking about getting along when you are reaping the blessings of God's greatest promises, being a part of his kingdom. You won't even have to turn to Matthew 5:9 to know it's the Beatitudes, and further to know that the peacemakers, brethren, are blessed. But in 2 Corinthians chapter 13, I would have you come over there just to see a passage, maybe not quite so well known among us, but come to 2 Corinthians. And looking now at the last chapter, and down here, very near the end of the whole book, it says, finally, brethren, rejoice and be made complete. Be comforted. Be like-minded. Live in peace. And the God of love and peace shall be with you. Greet one another with a holy kiss. Could believe Jerry talking about a kiss, how it figures in the Old Testament, and as well in the New, carrying an idea simply of saying, you know, I love you. I really do. And I'd rather get along with you. But you're a mess and I'm perfect. So you have to choose, right? Do everything my way. No. But we'll have to make a decision, and probably nobody's going to really like it because hardly ever everybody gets, you know, what they want. It's just about the same thing. We're going to fulfill Isaiah's prophecies. We're going to prove to God that we can be what he always envisioned. In the last passage, that we'll close with this morning is in Philippians in chapter 2. Before Don and I married, I went to a man who had what appeared to be, and proved to be, certainly was until his dying day, a very great and good marriage. They were happy together, raising two kids that Don and I babysat for. As a matter of fact, some of the very first time we ever spent together was two of us going over to their house to babysit the kids. Long before Don and I would marry, we'd spent some time doing that. And I asked this man, I said, tell me please, what would you say is really the secret to a successful marriage? He said, Philippians 2. Never even hesitated. Reads like this, brethren. If there is any encouragement in Christ, and you know there is. If there's any consolation of love, and you know there is. If there's any fellowship of the Spirit. If any affection and compassion, make my joy complete by being of the same mind, maintaining the same love, united in spirit, intent on one purpose. Do nothing from selfishness or empty conceit, but with humility of mind, let each of you regard one another as more important than himself. Do not look out for your own personal interests, but also for the interests of others. Have this attitude in yourselves, which was also in Christ Jesus, who, although he existed in the form of God, did not regard equality with God a thing to be grasped, but emptied himself, taking the form of a bondservant and being made in the likeness of men. Being found in appearance as a man, he humbled himself by becoming obedient to the point of death, even death on a cross. Now, brethren, that man's words were so true. And Don and I just had the happiest marriage I think I've ever seen. It works for marriage. It works in parenting. It'll work in business. It'll work at school. You will find that the principles in Philippians 2 chapters, verses 1 through 8, will work everywhere you go. I guarantee it. It'll make life easier. Brethren, in a grand and glorious, just premier man, it works for the saints 4 times a week when we come together to try and dance without stepping on each other's toes. Never going to happen. So when you go home after every assembly and your feet are just throbbing, you're all red and swollen, and, oh, I wish this and I wish that, remember, brother, Philippians 2. And remember this, praise God, there's so much more of that coming. Because I truly believe, I wouldn't lie to you, I'm a preacher, brethren, this church is moving. This church is going somewhere. It looks good. I think it can be better, so do you. That's why we're here. So, every step of the way, brethren, there will be bigger problems. Now, by my count, I'm about 3 minutes over right now, trying to look at my watch, and I forgot to put a passage onto that chart that I do want to look at. So I'm going to step on your toes, and I really didn't get to do this. It's not a living illustration. We come to chapter 15 of the book of Acts. I want you to see that. I really had intended to put that up there. I just forgot. But come to Acts chapter 15. And now, let's look at verse 35. We'll go to the end of Acts, the 15th chapter. 35. Paul and Barnabas stayed in Antioch, teaching and preaching with many others also the word of the Lord. And they just finished, brethren, the first missionary journey. It takes us 2 chapters in the book of Acts, 13 and 14, to tell you about it. So then, in 36, after some days, Paul said to Barnabas, let us return and visit the brethren in every city in which we proclaim the word of the Lord and see how they are. Let's go do that journey again, Barnabas. It was so successful the first time. You're the son of exhortation. We're closest to friends, been through everything. You know that. Let's do it again. And then in verse 37, Barnabas, was desirous of taking John, called Mark, along with them also. But Paul kept insisting they should not take him along, who had deserted them in Pamphylia, start of the first journey, and had not gone with them to the work. Paul's thinking, that boy failed us, failed me, bailed on us. We accepted him as a part of the troop. We took him out on the journey and crossed, you know, over onto the mainland from the island, and what do we get? He bails out and goes home to mommy in Jerusalem. That's literally true. You can see that in the rest of the Acts. So Paul's insisting in 38, I'm not taking that failure with me. And in 39, there arose such a sharp disagreement that they separated from one another. Barnabas took Mark with him and sailed away to Cyprus. But Paul chose Silas and departed, being committed by the brethren to the grace of the Lord. And he was traveling through Syria and Cilicia, strengthening the churches. And just brace your heart. Best friends. They were cellmates on the trail. They had been through tough stuff and wonderful stuff. They were just knit like that. And then, and off they go. Now what happened? In the first place, brethren, I would suggest that no sin took place. No sin took place. This is the way the world works. They disagreed. And twice as much work got done. Instead of one journey, became two journeys, didn't it? Twice as much work got done. So be encouraged, brethren. Be encouraged. Wear steel-toed shoes, but be encouraged. It's getting better all the time. That's why you're so miserable. It's great. Just march on. March on, march on. Appreciate your attention. So I'll please stand. Right now, get up. I always leave you to confusion, I think.